Hello, and thank you for tuning in to Infinity Repertory Theater's Modcast. Today I'm your host, Mickey Melillo. Tomorrow, I'll be your host, Mickey Melillo. Today is July 14th, 2012. Today I'm sitting here with the young lady who's playing the other Susan and understudying the role of Kit, Miss Allie Gibbs. Allie, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
So let's start off with the whole reason that we are here and we're doing this Modcast. Mod. Tell us a little bit about MOD and a little bit about your experience.
Well, MOD is... Do you want to give like a plot description or what are you...
Tell me about MOD. I'm asking for a plot description. I'm asking for your experience, how you feel about MOD. Tell me Allie's spoken word about MOD.
I think that MOD is... It's based around Beatlemania in the 60s. And it kind of revolves around... Rory and his wanting to become a Beatle. So everybody's relationships throughout the show kind of like everyone's connected because of Rory, and that's kind of like how I see the show.
You dual the role of Susan with Emma Wellington, who we just had a mock guest with, and you also understudy Kit. How difficult is it doing both?
I'm not gonna lie, it's a little bit more challenging because you have to know both parts, and it's hard because they're so different as characters. So I'm kind of switching from like this innocent, like, you know, I like Rory, I have a crush on you, to like Wes, get me French fries. Like it's like a different transition because I'm like really sweet and then I'm really kind of like feisty. So
well, you just said feisty, and I was about to go into it. In our first Modcast, I asked you to give one word descriptions of your characters. For Susan, you said innocent. So let's talk about Susan. Why do you feel, let's elaborate on what you said, why do you feel that Susan is innocent?
Because I feel like she's the kind of person that she really wants to be, like, helpful to people, and she's never done anything to harm anybody, and I feel bad because, like, what happens to her, like, it's not her fault that, you know, Haley goes after Rory. I mean, I feel like she's innocent because she didn't really do anything to deserve that, because she's known Rory longer, and like, you know... Haley just kind of takes him, and I feel bad that she doesn't really, like, get him right away like that, because I feel like she kind of deserves to.
Okay, and now we're going to switch to the other side of the spectrum with the role. We haven't talked to Jesse yet, so, you know, tell us your take on Kit. Kit, who you said is, your one word was feisty. So tell me about Kit.
I don't know, I feel like she comes off kind of like... headstrong, but I feel like deep down she's definitely a nice person. And like I was talking to Jesse about it recently, like it's hard to capture her, and we're always noticing how Paul's like, no, you know you don't do it like that, like it needs to be more of an impulse, you're not like angry, and me and Jesse are always like so confused with that, like I know Jesse especially, but then I'm thinking about how I want to play it because I need to, like, I'm starting to like memorize the lines for Kit now too, and like I keep thinking like I don't, like, it's, there's so many different, like, emotions that she has. Like, she's always switching. Like, is she angry? Is she, like, hurt? Is she, like, what is she? She's very hard to capture as a character. So that's...
I can fully understand. Yeah. It's almost like, you know, you step in one character and you're innocent, sweet, and then you Jekyll and Hyde on yourself and you're going to the other spectrum. Now, I got to mention, in, when we did the workshop production in May, you got a chance to play Kit not once... just in the understudy run that we did that one Sunday, but you got a chance to do it on opening night. For the listeners out there, we had a couple of medical issues the week leading up to opening night. Brian, ironically, it's Wes and Kit, the two couple of the show. They had a couple of medical issues leading up. Brian had some migraines, and Jesse, I think, had some throat and voice problems. So on opening night... it got all discombobulated. Allie here jumped into the role of Kit instead of playing Susan. I jumped in and played the multi-character role because Joe Coppola, who we'll speak to in our next modcast, plays the multi-character role, and I understudy. He jumped into the role of Wes. So it wound up just being all over the place. Some of the understudies got a chance to play in more than one, and in my case, I got to play more than... Brian did on stage. How did you feel about that? That you actually got called up, as in my sports mentality, you got called up from the minor leagues to go to the big leagues.
Yeah, yeah.
How did you feel about it? Especially, because that's how an understudy works. I mean, yeah. I know Paul kind of has been drawing that into you guys, but an understudy in professional world is the day of the show. You get a phone call. By the way, you're on. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you can be like, oh, give me 2 days and I'll prepare.
Yeah, yeah.
How did you feel about that?
I actually, like, Jessie a couple days before was telling me that she wasn't, like, feeling that great. So I kind of, I looked at my script and I made sure that I really knew all of Kit's lines. And so I wasn't really that, like, I wasn't really shocked, which was nice. Like, I kind of knew a couple days before. It wasn't like, it was like, you know, 2 hours before the show and she's like, oh, by the way, I can't perform. So it was kind of nice to have a little bit of a heads up. But it was definitely, like, definitely a little bit of a challenge to have to, you know, go through that. And I actually ended up playing her part more than I played Susan when I was here. So that was kind of funny because I actually was away the next weekend for the show.
Right.
My sister's college graduation. So I only played Susan once and I played Kit 2 times. So that was kind of funny. But I mean, I'll get my full run in New York City. So
your full run in New York City. You'll get your full run
mm-hmm.
in Edinburgh.
Let's
also
cross our fingers.
Cross our fingers. Since you brought up New York City, have you ever performed in New York City before?
No, this is my first time.
How do you feel about that?
You know, it kind of is just starting to sink in the past, like, week or so that we're performing on Off-Broadway, and I think that's so cool, and I feel like not a lot of people, really hardly, like, anyone that's my age get the experience to do that, so I think that's really cool, especially since I'm considering a career in, like, acting and theater. I think that this is a great experience, and I'm so thrilled.
And you are 16 years old, correct?
Yes.
So you're essentially making your Off-Broadway debut.
That's so weird to say.
at the age of 16, you're
yeah.
still in high school. You know, I talked
yeah.
to Emma. I did a show down the city when I was 22.
Right.
And that was my Off-Broadway debut. So you got 6
yeah.
years on me, kiddo. So good for you. Now, have you ever been to Europe before?
No.
No.
This is my first time. Only, let's see, out of the country, I've only been to Canada and Puerto Rico. So
Canada and Puerto Rico. How do you feel about going to Edinburgh?
I think it's going to be so cool because never being to Europe and my first time I'm performing in like the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, I think that's so fun. And we're also stopping in London, which I think is really cool because I've always wanted to go to England, so this should be really...
Now, I don't know if you know this, and I haven't touched on this on a previous 5 modcast.
Yeah.
The Edinburgh Fringe Festival is the largest arts festival and the oldest arts festival in the world.
Yeah.
One of the special things about the Edinburgh Fringe is that it's an open festival, meaning there's no application process. There's an application process.
Yeah.
But it's not like you have to go through and say, oh, we want this show, we don't want this show, we want this show, like other Fringe festivals around the world.
Yeah.
That's why it's so large. How does it feel that you're going to be amongst 20,000 other shows and 2-point-some-odd million people that they're anticipating coming to the Fringe from the start to end?
Right.
How does that make you feel?
I'm really excited. I really hope that we can sell, you know, we can definitely sell a lot of tickets and have a lot of people come. It's kind of hard because we're up against a lot of people, obviously, but I think that when we're there, we can, you know, bring in a good audience and we should have a good time really no matter what. Like, I think Paul was saying once, you know, like, there could be a day when you have, like, 3 people in the audience, or a day where you have, you know, it's sold out. You never really know. It's kind of like you have to wait and see. So I think it's kind of crazy how many people go to this, and hopefully we should have a good turnout.
Now, I know when Paul was describing this to me when I went 2 years ago to the Fringe for the first
mm-hmm.
time, he was telling me all these things, especially about something like High Street
yeah.
and what it's like. And I tried to visualize it, and I couldn't actually visualize what it actually looked like.
Yeah.
What do you imagine the Fringe to be like? What, in your mind, in the mind of Allie, what do you imagine it like there?
I just see, like, a kind of, like, a broad street, and I just see, like, thousands of people just kind of, like, wandering around, like, people, like, standing on little, like, platforms, like, singing, and I'm sure it's really, really loud and really, like, probably hard to hear yourself think. And I can see a lot of, like, tourists walking through with maybe, like, playbills or, I don't know, some, you know what I mean? Like, something like that. And people trying to go up to them and getting, you know, them to come see their show. That's how I see it.
I'm not going to try and describe it to you because
yeah,
no matter
probably.
How hard I do,
yeah.
it doesn't compare to the actual experience of being
yeah.
at the Fringe. It's It's an experience. Packed. Well, the weekends, it takes you a half an hour to go that little stretch of High Street, but that's how packed it is. But it just, Paul told me, I can't tell you countless numbers of times in 2010, what High Street is like. And I'm like, oh, really, really? And I'm like, I got excited. And when I got there and I looked, like, I was like, wow, that's not what I thought of.
Yeah.
So, you were mentioning ticket sales and selling tickets. In New York City, we are down to a total of 5 tickets left.
I thought we're all sold out.
We're sold out. No, we're not fully sold out.
But on the website it says so.
Really? Since when?
Since yesterday. I remember Lindsay posted a picture in our Facebook group. It said sold out next to all the shows.
You might have not seen, if you go to the next page, there's still a couple more pages of shows that weren't listed. But we are sold out for the Saturday, Sunday first weekend.
Yeah.
Thursday and Saturday, the second weekend, we have 1 ticket left for the Friday and 4 tickets left for the Sunday performance. We're essentially going to have a sold out run. I can only imagine.
Yeah.
How does that make you feel that you're selling out your off-Broadway debut?
I think that's awesome. I didn't think that, I don't know if we could do that, but I know that like all the shows that I'm in are sold out, and I'm pretty much, because like everybody in my whole family is coming to see me in it. It's funny because my mom's like, oh, I invited like so-and-so, and I'm like, who? Like, I don't know, it's kind of funny. She's like, I'm just inviting everybody I know. So I was like, okay, mom.
You're currently the hottest selling show at 59 East 59.
Really?
East Edinburgh. There's only a couple of other shows that have sold out a performance. We're the only show right now that is at a point that
we're going to sell out.
I mean, I can only assume, whoever you 5 people are, please buy tickets. And buy them now, because honestly, we got this ticket report yesterday. They could be gone by now. So please buy. 1 for Friday, 4 for Sunday. So your off-Broadway debut, sellout. In Edinburgh, we're close to, if we're not at, 100 people have bought tickets in Edinburgh. We haven't fully advertised. We haven't done anything. We're not there. They haven't seen anything. All they know, I told Emma this also, is the little blurb in the program of a program of 20,000 other shows. How does that make you feel?
Really good. I think that's really surprised. I mean, like, I know that Paul was saying our show's, like, pretty popular, that they're expecting it to be pretty good, so I hope that we can live up to it, and hopefully more people will buy tickets when we're actually set. So, like, that's before we even go, and then we go, and we can, I don't know what I'm saying. Can I start over for what I was saying?
Okay, let's start over. Okay. Let's try this again. This isn't getting edited, I'm telling you that right
now.
Why? Because I like to bust your chops.
Okay, all right.
So, go ahead.
Okay. I was going to say, is that I'm surprised, and that if, before we even go, we sell, 100 tickets, like, what is it going to be like when we go? Like, we could, it's exciting.
It is. It's very exciting. The fact of the matter is that you're not there. You're 3,000 miles away.
Yeah.
You got an ocean between you and a country, and you're already selling tickets.
I think that's so cool, because, like, there are 20,000 other shows, and like, they picked our show to come see. And they're complete strangers, too.
Exactly. It's not like your mom and dad are coming, your friends are coming. These are people that, we do have some families coming, but I don't think of all the families that are coming that they bought 100 tickets.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we do have our British producers over there, and they are pushing us hard.
Yeah.
And, how does it make you feel that in Edinburgh, we're in one of the major venues? We are at 8:15 p.m.
Yeah.
We're at prime time. How does that make you feel?
I was like really, really pumped, and then I kind of started to feel a little bit more nervous about it. But I feel like, the excitement's going to overpower the nerves, and I think we're going to do really well. But I think like that we're at like prime time, that's like
prime time at the Fringe,
yeah.
At the Edinburgh Fringe.
Which is, like, really big, and I don't think any of us were really expecting that.
We're also in the middle of the producers' 2 main shows. Our producers over there have been producing shows for, I want to say, 2 or 3 years now, and their 2 main shows have been the Rat Pack Review and the Blues Brothers Live. And in previous years, they used to be back-to-back. This year, they separated them. Rat Pack before us, we're in the middle, and the Blues Brothers is after. So we're sandwiched in between two sold-out shows every time they go to the Fringe.
It's crazy.
That make you feel more nervous, more excited?
Honestly, more excited. I know I said I was kind of nervous, but I'm really not that nervous.
Okay. All right, let's take a break from Maude and Edinburgh and everything like that. I want to hear a story. Okay. Lindsay, when she did her Maudcast, told us that she auditioned for Idol, and she also auditioned for America's Got Talent. And what she told me was that you and her auditioned together one year and did a skit. But she didn't tell me anything about the skit. I know you, Allie. And I know the antics that you can do. Yeah. I want to hear about this skit.
Okay. So basically, in about seventh grade, when the song Hot and Cold came out by Katy Perry, Lindsay and I, it was over the summer, I think, of seventh grade, we thought it'd be really funny to make a parody to it called Fat and Old. So we made up a parody to the song, and we recorded it on GarageBand and everything, and we showed, like, our family, and we made a video to it, made, like, a music video, and it's really embarrassing, but we thought that it was really funny, and someone suggested, I don't remember who, but they were like, why don't you guys, like, audition for America's Got Talent? That'd be so funny. And we're like, okay, but we're like, we didn't know if we would just go in there and sing a song, because we can't, like, make it, you have to kind of do something new every time, and we didn't want to, like, we'd have to write a new song every single week, and we couldn't really do that. So we made a skit, and we're like, oh, like, if we got on, we could just make up different skits each time, and, like, whatever. So we dressed up as old ladies, and once we had our costumes on and everything, we didn't get in our costumes before we went to the place. We actually changed into them when we were at the place where we auditioned. I just realized that. So we went to the place in the city, and we changed into our costumes in the bathroom. And I actually remember we ran into somebody who was really nice in the bathroom, and she was telling us how she auditioned and already, like, a little bit earlier in the day, and she sang, like, an original song. She was like, they usually don't, you know, push for singing original songs, but I really wanted to do it. And we're like, oh, like, good for you. Like, we hope you get on. We're, like, talking to her for a while. I actually think I have it on video because we were, like, filming ourselves in the bathroom. Okay. Anyway, so so when we had our costumes on, we would walk around and we were like, oh, Sonny, could you help me with this? Like, we were, like, saying to, like, random people and trying to, like, you know, get out there to, like, different people. And I remember there was one time we were standing online actually waiting, and there was, like, one of the producers or someone was walking around, and we were, like, pretend we were, like, doing it to him too. Like, oh, Sonny, could you tell us where the nearest restroom is and stuff like that? And it was kind of fun. I mean, it was a really long day. I feel like we were there for, like, 7 hours or something like that. So,
and you were in seventh grade.
Yes.
Oh, and so your attention span let you stay there.
Yes, okay. Exactly. And Lindsay and I both brought our moms because you have to bring an adult. So they're like, oh, you guys can hang out together and we'll just we'll do our thing. So I remember we practiced a lot. We brought, like, a boombox and the recording for the song. And we would practice, like, upstairs, and then we'd, like, come back down to where, like, all the people were. And they called us, and we had to wait on a line before we got to go in. I think we waited on, like, a couple of different lines, actually. Like, we'd go into a room, and then we'd wait, and then we got moved to another room. And then finally we got moved into the room with the, I don't know who it was. It might have been just someone that was judging it, I guess. And Jessica as well. We walked into the room, and I remember kind of, like, being really nervous because, you know, you're dressed up as, like, an old lady, and they don't really know you, so it was kind of, like, it was an interesting moment.
Can you talk about it a little more? Because I'm actually very interested, because, you said Jesse Show's mom just walked into the space and got a little distracted.
Yeah.
Lindsay said that she auditioned, and she told me that the experience was much different than Idol. Mm-hmm. Justin told me that he, you know, for some of the other reality shows. Tell me about the process for America's Got Talent, because Lindsay didn't go into it with me, that bum. tell me about it. You waited online for 7 hours. You finally got in. What happened with the producers?
We were singing, and we did our skit and everything, and they said thank you, and they said, I don't really I think you had to wait outside, and they just kind of, like, picked, you know, who would get through, if anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we didn't get through, but we were okay with it. I mean, we were only in seventh grade, and, you know, we still have a lot of time. We're like, oh, maybe we could do another thing, which we haven't done, but, like, we always could if we wanted to. But our hopes were high, but not too high. I remember I was talking to my mom. She's like, you know, I don't want you to, like, get, you know, you don't want you to skyrocket and be too excited because, you know, these things are really hard to get onto. So I think Lindsay and I both had a good understanding about that before we auditioned.
If you got the opportunity again, would you audition for it again?
Good question. I don't really know. I mean, if I went on, I'm guessing I'd probably sing or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not.
Okay.
Probably not. Just because I feel like the chances are so slim, and I don't know if I really want to. I feel like that's something that you have to go through at least once in your life,
yeah.
But then, you know, you don't really have to do it again, which I don't think I would.
Okay. Now, talking about all these antics and everything like this, a video popped up.
Mm. Oh, gosh.
about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, that has been commonly referred to amongst the cast members and everybody around here as the Ginger Fail. For those who don't know Allie, Allie is a redhead. She's just the Annie red hair redhead. Tell us about the infamous Ginger Fail at the Old Space.
Lindsay and I we made up a dance, I think, a couple days beforehand, and we were in the theater. I think it was after Rent rehearsal, or maybe we were waiting for Rent rehearsal. Either way, we were in old dance studio, and we were playing the song. I think it was Stronger by Kanye West or something like that. Well, I was wearing the boots that didn't have much traction on the bottom. They're very slippery. And Lindsay actually had, like, walked away for a second, and we were recording ourselves because we wanted to remember the dance. We wanted to, like, see how it looked. And so it was still recording. Lindsay left, and I was, like, still dancing, like, you know, being, like, weird. And I started, like, jerking. I was going backwards, and I don't really know what happened. I just kind of slipped because my boot was really slippery, and I just fell on my butt and started laughing hysterically.
It was one of the funniest things. Facebook being what Facebook is, I saw it posted on Facebook. I laughed and laughed and laughed. So I actually found the video sometime very recently, and I saw it, and I was like, oh, I gotta watch it again. I still laugh every time I see it. And even just, what, 2 days ago, I started recording you on some things, and you fell off the queue.
Yeah. I have a lot of ginger fails. You kind of miss them when I'm not here.
Yeah, I do. When I'm not here, when I'm not around, I'm not with you 24-7.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, I'm hearing about all these ginger fails that you do.
Yeah.
You said Rent. I gotta tell you this story. I told you that I would tell you this story, and I'm going to. The first time that I saw you, and didn't even meet you yet, was your audition for Rent.
Uh-huh.
I was, if I remember correctly, I was there just for a little bit, and then I had to go off to work. I think I was working at 3 o'clock that day. I remember walking out to go to work, and you were auditioning with Steve Loftus and Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And you did Take Me or Leave Me, if I remember correctly. I don't have much say in any of the audition. I'm just a helper in all the production shows, and I stage manage all the Infinity shows. Took a piece of paper, and I wrote the word, wow, and I handed it to Paul.
Really?
That's what I did. I told you I didn't want to tell you that and beforehand because I wanted to see your reaction.
Yeah.
But that's what I wrote because you nailed that song. And Paul told me, he goes, I don't even remember seeing that note. I was just watching her. I was so engrossed in her audition.
Really?
Yeah. So that is my first memory. I never knew you before. I know your sister used to do shows with Paul.
Yes.
And I didn't even know your sister. But I that was the first time I saw you, and I was like, oh, wow, jeez. And that's why I wrote, wow, and that's it. And then I went to work.
Thanks, Mickey. No problem.
Let's talk about some of the other shows. I mean, I've seen you in not many, but some very good roles and some very memorable roles.
Yeah.
Last 5 years, obviously, I was your stage manager. You did very, very well. You were paired up with
Brian.
Very, very well with that.
Thank you.
I saw Brian 3 times, so I forget which women he was with. But what I love the most about you, which I really didn't get a chance to see in the other few shows that I saw you with, was the Wedding Singer. Because you got to play characters.
Yes.
And characters is what, as an actor for me, is what I play.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I'm a character actor. You know, my short, round self is never going to be the leading man. So I am a character actor. And I know how hard it can be, and I know Joe is learning how hard it is to play a character because he's the everyman, the multi-character
man. Yes, yes.
How did you feel about playing all the characters you did in The Wedding Singer?
I felt, when I auditioned, I know I really wanted to, you know, get the role of Julia, but when I first found out that I was put in the ensemble, and then they said, here, we want you to have these roles. So at first, I was, you know, a little upset, considering the fact that Lindsay got the lead, so I was like, oh, okay. I was actually her understudy, which was kind of funny, too. I was understudy for Julia in Wedding Singer, which I actually never really got a chance to do anything with, but that's okay. They emailed me, and I was like, they were like, oh, could you play the large lady? And I was like, excuse me? I play the large lady? And I remember like calling Lindsay, and I was like, they asked me to play the large lady, and she's like, that's a really fun part. And I was like, really? She's like, go listen to the song Casualty of Love.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll know. And I was like, okay. So I looked up like a YouTube video and I was watching it. I started laughing because it was funny. And I was like, you know, I started to kind of get out of the thinking that you have to play a lead role in every single show you're in, because it's not how it goes. And you're not always going to get the lead. And you have to understand that playing other roles, like little parts, adds to the show. Like if those little roles didn't exist, then the show wouldn't be what it was. And playing those little roles also are good at, like, you know, building your skills as an actor and showing you that you don't have to be the lead to have a good time in a show. So playing the large lady was really fun. I also played a waitress. I had a line as a waitress. That was kind of exciting. I also played a secretary, and I was, like, one of the dancers. So I had a good experience with the show. So it was good.
I'm very glad you said what you did, because I was actually going to touch on it a little bit.
Oh, okay.
You know, sometimes, you know, being the lead is great. You get your 15-minute spotlight. But like I told you, you were memorable to me. Just like other ModCast members, Brian, Liliana, and you just mentioned Lindsay, and we talked to her already, were in the show.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Liliana because she took the garbage and tossed it on Robbie.
Yep.
And Brian was the best man at the start of the show, doing the drunken best man speech.
Yeah.
I remember them. Do I know? Would it be because I know them? Could be. But also, I don't remember many of the other characters because nobody stood out. I did a show 10 years ago, which was actually the first show that I did with Paul. Footloose at the old NWCA. I didn't have a leading role. I was originally cast as the uncle and I believe the coach.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, I got put in as one of the bad guys, which things the girl gets around. I got put into the barbecue, so that's, I'm in Let's Hear It for the Boy. I became one of Willard's friends. Obviously, this is theater. It was young adults and kids.
Yeah.
There weren't much guys.
Right.
I became one of Willard's friends, so now I'm in Mama Says. I was in the opening number. I was in the closing number. It wound up being a running thing where the gentleman playing Willard, who's a very good friend of mine to this day, his brother came up to me and said, you know, it was funny. We were talking around and making bets on what character you come out as next.
Yeah.
So it's, and people still remember me at that. Matter of fact, everybody in the show had an understudy.
Yeah.
But me. And there was one day I wasn't feeling good during tech week. And the director turned to me and said, I'm really glad you're feeling better. I'm like, really? Why? She goes, I would have no idea what to do if you couldn't do this show.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh. But it's another instance where it's not having the lead that's important. It's what you make of the characters
or make
of your part. You could play, I mean, joking around with Emma, she said her first show was Slack and she played a lily pad.
Yeah.
She's the best gosh darn lily pad.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, she's going to be remembered as that lily pad.
Yeah.
I got remembered for a long time as, you know, playing those roles with the group of friends.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, to this day, I played Charlie Brown in Nourishell in 2003. So that's 9 years ago. I had somebody come up to me and point at me and goes, weren't you Charlie Brown? I was like, yeah. I was like, I saw you with my camp. I was like, oh, thanks.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Wow, I've got a mustache and beard right now. You know who I was?
Yeah.
So it really is. I'm really glad that you said that.
Yeah.
All right, let's go back to Mod. We took a little bit of a break. Mm-hmm. I want to ask you, during this entire process, mm-hmm. what has been the toughest thing for you?
For me personally or like as a whole?
Let's go with you personally to start.
The toughest thing has been probably deciding on how lines should be said. because, like, as an actor, you have to make the decisions for what you think, how the character would say this and say that, and how, like, the character reacts. And I actually don't have a problem with, like, I feel like I'm always doing something on stage. Like, I'm not one to just, like, kind of sit there and, like, graze. Like, you know what I mean? I'm kind of, like, I'm always doing something on stage. Like, I'll make a little, like, scene out of, you know, nothing, like, by myself. Actually, it's kind of funny. This is kind of, like, a little off topic, but when I was in The Wedding Singer, afterwards, we'd sit down in the audience, and Mr. Steele, who was our director, would tell us, you know, he'd give us notes and everything. And one day he says, Allison, and I was like, talking to me? I play, you know, large lady, whatever. And he's like, I just want to take a moment to recognize that Allison is always doing something on stage, and I really appreciate that. I was like, oh, thanks, Mr. Steele. Like, he noticed that. It made me feel really good so that someone noticed that I'm not always just sitting there and I'm always doing something on stage. So that was kind of nice. So going back to what I was saying, that was a little, like, you know,
tangent.
On topic. Yeah, a little tangent. But definitely, like, deciding on how things should be said, because, like I said, it's no problem to, you know, like, you know, do something on stage, but, like, the way words are said, I feel like, is something that I had to work on, because, like, for example, if there was a line like, yeah, me too. Like, yeah, it's a little line, but it has a lot of meaning. So, like, when you find the meaning behind a line, I think that's where it's a little bit tricky for me.
Especially with your character, who's very, very innocent,
yeah.
as you put it, and, you know, very loving in
mm-hmm.
the case of Rory.
Yeah.
Well, tell me about the group as a whole. What do you think one of the major challenges has been?
I think one of the major challenges has definitely been consistency. We could do really, really well in DJ Cousin Jack one day, and then the next day it drops a little bit, and then the next day it kind of goes up a little bit, and the next day it's the same. Like, it needs to stay on one level, I think, and that's something that we need to work on keeping our energy up. I know that might sound a little redundant if you're listening to the other podcast, but the energy, I think we're starting to get it, which is really good. Like, I know I was thinking that I really want to say this, that we've been going moment to moment in every scene, and I think that's really, really helped the show. I really like what Paul's been doing, stopping and, like, making sure that the meaning is still in the show, because, you know, you could do the scene 10 times, but if you're not doing it with any purpose, if you're not, like, putting everything you have into it and building the characters the way that you want it to be seen, then it's going to be good. But if you really go moment to moment and you make sure that all the interactions are really meaningful, then it's going to be a great show. So that's what I've been thinking.
I think you're thinking right on point. I truly believe everything you just said, and I really do think, and I think not just you, but I think the entire cast really sees that what we're doing now moment to moment is getting better. We've said this to Emma, and I'm going to say it to you.
Mm-hmm.
We want you to get to the next level. We don't want to make this a high school production.
Mm-hmm.
You're going up against professionals. You've got Anthony Rapp that's there.
My God.
Oh, another Rent head right here, by the way, folks. I just didn't want to go into Rent again with another female and have her scream and yell. Anthony Rapp is going to be there. You have a group that's known as Axis of Awesome, which is a viral sensation down in Australia
yeah.
for their comedy of their four chords, the four chords stuff.
I don't know.
They're going to be there. so many big, the University of Edinburgh's major theater program, they're there, they're performing. A lot of people are performing, professionals, amateurs alike. And the American High School Theater Festival is there also, but they're on the outskirts of town. They're not in the main festival. We're in the main festival. We're in with professionals.
Yeah.
Calm down. Don't cry. It's okay. Everything, being a high school production or high school level production
yeah.
is not good. We want you to be to the next level.
We need professional caliber, don't we?
You don't have to be professional caliber. But we want you to raise the bar. We don't want people to walk into the show seeing high school-aged kids
yeah.
and see a high school production. We want to walk in like 13 on Broadway or off Broadway
yeah.
a few years ago. They were all 13 years old. Every single cast member was around that 13 age range. None of, but you walk into that, and it wasn't a high school production.
Yeah.
It was a professional production.
Exactly.
Matter of fact, two people currently are on the show Victorious.
Yeah.
That were in
yep.
13. So.
Yeah, we have to emulate that. I think.
That's it. You're right. You have to take what you did at Fox Lane, that type of production, and just bump it up.
Yeah.
Don't need to be perfect. But we don't want you to do nothing on stage.
Yeah.
So that's it. I'm all done. Is there anything else you'd like to tell our listeners about Ally, Maude, America's Got Talent, being a redhead, Ginger Fails, anything like that? Anything? Any last words for our...
Any last words? I would say if you ever get the experience to do something like this, definitely, you know, take that opportunity, because I actually... almost didn't do the show because when it was kind of, you know, it's big commitment, obviously, and I'm working at a camp right now, a day camp from 8:30 to 3 o'clock, and then I have 2 hours and then I come right here. So it's a big commitment, but I'm very glad that I decided to do it, and I'm really thrilled that I'm in this production. So like I was saying, if you get the chance to do something like this, definitely go for it. I mean, of course, you know, cost comes into everything. And, you know, you need the consent from, like, your parents or guardian. You know what I'm saying? But,
yeah.
like, if you do get the chance, definitely do something like this.
All right. So, Ally, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you.
And if you'd like to know more information about Maude, you can go to our website at maudemusical.com. For our next podcast, we will be sitting down with the gentleman who plays more than one character in this show. And he will be interviewing me during his podcast, Mr. Joe Coppola. Thank you very much. See you next time.
Bye.
Maude will be produced in New York City at the 59 East 59th Street Theater's East of Edinburgh Festival on July 21st and 22nd, as well as July 26th through 29th. All shows are at 7 p.m. For ticketing information, please go to 59e59.org. In Edinburgh, Scotland, Maude will be produced at venue number 50 CECA at the Edinburgh College of Art at Lady Lawson and Laurelston Place. Maude will be produced every night from August 3rd to August 19th at 8:15 p.m. For ticketing information, please go to www.edfringe.com. For more information about the show, cast, and crew, please go to maudemusical.com.